Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Amy. I am an alcoholic. Housekeeping. We will only be recording and publishing the audio portion of this meeting. You can sign up for email or listen to previously recorded meetings on our website at simpleactions.net. Permissions are set in Zoom so that anyone may show captions to get a real-time transcription of what is being said at the meeting. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me this serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. Okay?
I'm Gary, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Gary.
Welcome.
That's all. Welcome. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing steps 5, 6, and 7. Please join me in welcoming our panel. We have Brian McKay from Jaywalkers in Richmond.
Yep.
Should I have just said Brian Mick? Sorry.
It's
not McKay, it's no, MCK.
Sorry.
I'm just trying to be anonymous. And David F. from Simple Actions. I will read the first paragraph on page 72, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Step 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. And step 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Page 72. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves. But they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. Brian?
Sure.
Hey, everybody. I'm Brian. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Brian.
Hey. I don't know, do you say times and dates and things like that? Or it doesn't matter, I guess.
Yeah, go ahead and say it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so I am this many freshly. I have a sponsor who has a very deep sponsorship tree, and I'm really lucky for that. And that's going to come up a lot in these steps because I was able to get to this point while my sponsor was going through a really, really heavy time himself and going back through some stuff. So it was fresh on both sides for everybody really going through this. The three entities that are talked about in this, God, ourselves, and another human being, are three things that did not exist in my life. Absolutely not. God had already been shut out for various reasons in the past. I grew up Catholic, but didn't understand. That was part of the show. I didn't understand any of the spiritual stuff, you know, choir boy, all those things, right? So that was just a place where my mom showed off her kids. So there was no spiritual stuff. It was just Sunday mornings, and an annoying Sunday morning because, you know, sometimes when I slept. So having to do that was just shut off from that. And then I ended up going to a parochial school, pulled out of public school with all my friends and held back in a parochial school. So that twisted that again, right? To myself, by the time I was finished, there was nothing left. It was just devolved into whatever it was that I was floating through the world with. And then another human being, of course, you don't exist unless you're shaped a certain way and I want something. It's really it. You know, I could get everything I needed without being anywhere near you people, and I didn't give a fuck. You know, it's just I didn't need anybody else. So, you know, this is the spiritual emptiness that I had that I didn't know about until, you know, I got to this point. 1 through 3 were easy because I truly was done. I had nothing left. I had nothing left to fight with. I had no excuses. I had no energy to fight whatsoever at that point. Writing down the fourth step, I felt so great after I had sat with my sponsor crying on the floor during step 3 that I was just like, okay, I just want this off of me. I have to get this off. And then just saying it was really wild. And it was a different rehearsal. I spent my whole life rehearsing all these things that I was going to tell somebody during the day to make sure that I could get through the day so they wouldn't think I was drunk. It was a totally different rehearsal of stuff that I was going to tell somebody else now to just get it off of me. Just that pushback that when somebody's close to you and just get the, you know, that was how my fifth step felt. And it will loop back around as we get to the other two. But the first shot was just absolutely, you know, wasn't one of those best I could do at the time. It was in crisis. I need this gone. Thanks.
Did it? Thank you, Brian. Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name is David.
Hey, David.
I love the way you described that. Just get it off me. What is the it? You know, it's on me. So, I said my name is, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date's October 24th, 1989. This is my home group. I have a sponsor. My sponsor is aware that he sponsors me. It's not a theoretical relationship. And I have the privilege of working with other men in Alcoholics Anonymous, the joy of working with other men in Alcoholics Anonymous. All of this has come hard to me. I really wanted drinking to be the problem. I really deep down was convinced that if I could just stop drinking, then I'd be fine. You know, and I think that's true for some people, perhaps hard drinkers or people who aren't alcoholics. Maybe if I, I had a friend of mine who said, listen, man, if you got a drinking problem, just stop drinking. All your problems are solved. Problem with me is I stop drinking and my problems get worse. You know, I get more isolated, more alone, more frightened, more of it on me. And I don't have my medicine to get out. I can't get away. I got to exist like this on the natch 24/7, you know, and it's very uncomfortable. But, you know, the reading up in tonight with having made our personal inventory. And I would just like to offer to anybody who's new that I got after my personal inventory a red hot year and a half into sobriety. Okay. I didn't run right out and do this thing because once again, I got this. I'm not drinking. I'm fine. Sure. Sorry. You guys got to work on your spiritual angle. I'm going sober bowling with the kids. But I eventually, and I can't quite remember, but I suspect that I just got sick of sitting in meetings, having nothing to say about the fourth step. And probably for no greater reason than that. I started to write the inventory. Now, some stuff got revealed to me immediately upon writing the inventory. Like I found out there's something magic about seeing your own handwriting in black and white staring back at you. But I saw in black and white in my own hand that I'm capable of hating you for the very same thing I'm capable of doing to you. You know, I'm afraid of being alone and I'm afraid of people, you know? I mean, when I saw that, I was like, oh my God, no wonder I need chemical assistance to get along. So I got a lot of juice out of just sitting down and writing that inventory. And what really, looking back on it, what also helped me procrastinate on it was that I was walking around with two or three things that I wasn't going to tell a living soul. You know, there were some things that were just so shameful to me. I could never imagine myself telling that to another human being. So I put it off as long as I could. But Bill tells us the reason, you know, why are we even doing this? Am I doing this so I can figure out what a piece of shit I am? You know, it's telling me that I can find these obstacles in my path. I can find the things that are blocking me from you and a relationship with whatever God is, that I'm blocked off from these things. I got too much of me in between me and HP. I got too much of me in between me and you. And that leaves me isolated and alone. And I need to take an honest look at that. For the purpose of them, where we read tonight, these are about to be cast out. We're going to get rid of that stuff. It's not serving us, right? So I love the line, in actual practice, we find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. You know, like I'm usually the only person I consult about anything. Yeah. And if I'm satisfied, it's all good. No need to look further. And then it's worth highlighting. He says in black and white, if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. And I don't have the experience personally with David, but I have experience working with other people who have held things back, kept things to themselves, put up a good front. And maybe, just maybe, if you're lucky, you get to see them again 4 or 5 years down the road. And maybe, just maybe, if we're all lucky, they're ready to tell it. So let's see. Yeah, I think that's it for that. Thank you.
Turning over to page 73. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension. That makes for more drinking.
All right. Yeah, this is an interesting one. How many of us actually had the going out wear that was the hat, the different glasses, the shitty clothes to hide when you were going out. All right. The things that you didn't usually wear so that you could go to a store, buy more stuff, so nobody would recognize you. You know, I lived in that for a really, really long time. The dumb thing was, is that I would usually be in walking distance of the places that knew me repeatedly in the same time of day. So the delusion that I was doing this different thing, looking different, you know, was all in the mirror. And most times I didn't remember it. You know, it's one of those, this is one of those ones where, you know, I could be at the house and then waking up in the morning with more stuff than I remembered buying. And then just wondering how I made it through and where did I go to get this and how much more did I buy and where am I going to find the rest of it? Did I leave it on the porch? A lot. Yeah. Yeah. Set it down to open up the door and shut the door and found a 12 pack outside. So that was kind of a bonus actually. I still passed out. So, you know, yeah, we're ready for the day. It was a gift, right? But yeah, that double life that, you know, I'm respectable at work, but as soon as I leave work, that is, you know, I am entitled from my own personal debauchery, you know, is ready.
Thank you. Yeah, man. When I say I'm an alcoholic, what I mean by that, we all got different stories, right? Or the details of our stories are different, right? But we all sort of have some things in common. And when I say I'm an alcoholic, what I mean by that is ever since I can remember, I've got that thing where if I put alcohol in me, I get thirsty for more alcohol. One beer is going to have two. Two's going to have three. Three's going to have four. Five demands a fifth, and fifth's looking for an eight ball. It's on, you know? It's on. And that's apparently a physical thing, and apparently I can do nothing about that. But that tallies with my experience today. But the real problem is I can't manage the decision not to drink. When I'm not drinking, I'm thinking about drinking. Or I'm thinking about how unfairly I've been treated, which is a good path to a drink, you see. So I've got a mind that's going to talk me into the first drink, and I've got a body that ensures oblivion will occur. And when I was younger, that was a sense of adventure to me. You know what I mean? Like I knew... you know what I mean? Throw the cap out the window and drive, motherfucker. I don't care where we're going, you know? You know what I mean? That was fun. My idea of fun. And sure, there was collateral damage, unpredictable things happen. But hey, that's the cost of doing business, you know? And as time goes on, that stuff gets less and less cute. And so we opened. So anyway, I got that thing. And I came here and you guys told me, yeah, you have no power over that. And I'm like, maybe you. So it took me 6 years coming in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous to surrender to doing these things. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. That's interesting to me. Right. So it's not just alcoholics that have a double life. Right. But more than most people, we do. And I think about every time I read that, I think about there was a time in my life where my girlfriend, my buddies, my mother, my friend, my children, well, I had a wife when I had children. My wife and my girlfriend really couldn't be in the same room at the same time. No, but that I was a different guy with all of these people, you know? I could not, you know, I couldn't be in the same room with my, the people I worked with and the people that I hung with and the, you know, and my parents, let's say. Just worlds just couldn't mesh because I'm a different cat with all of those people. Today, my kids could be in this room. My mom could be in this room. The people that I work with could be in this room right now. And that would be fine with me. And that is my life has been reconciled. You know, I don't have a stage character, right? I have a very flawed human character called David. And a really beautiful program called Alcoholics Anonymous that I get to show up in and be with you guys. I get to be flawed in front of my children. I get to be flawed at work. I get to just be who I am because of you people. But I thought that I had to present everyone my stage character. I thought I had this really complicated flow chart when I came here. If you asked me a question, I'd have to think, why does this cat want to know? This, what is the answer that would benefit me? How little can I tell him to satisfy him, you know, rather than just say, yeah, I got three kids, you know, I got to go through this whole thing, you know, and I got to keep it all straight. What I told this guy, what I told that person, you know, I mean, I'm a double life would have been a relief.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I love this bit about, I want to enjoy a certain reputation. I learned a long time ago, it's much more important to appear competent than actually invest the time and energy into becoming competent. As long as you speak competently and appear competent, that's good enough, right? Apparently it's not. But I want the reputation. In my heart, I know I don't deserve it. In my heart, I know I'm full of shit. And I'm trying to sell you something, right? And then this bit is just me, man. These two paragraphs that Amy read, they're just like all underlined. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. I don't know about you guys, but how many mornings I come to, I didn't know what a blackout was until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I just thought it was normal to lose time during an evening. But what I also know is I absolutely know what it's like to wake up and remember the things that I said and did last night and be revolted and disgusted. I did it again. These memories are a nightmare. I love this line. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. That really fits me, because I'm not really that sorry I did that shit, but I really don't want anyone to see me doing that shit. Am I the only one? All right. I'm going alone. You know what I mean? As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. And then the last sentence, he is under constant fear and tension. That makes for more drinking. I imagine I'm talking to my peers. I imagine I'm talking to people who know what it's like to live under constant fear and constant tension, and it's painful. And there's no way out other than to drink again, right? That's the only way I can get relief. I'm under fear. Fear and tension must be resolved. I can't live that way. So good thing we're going to resolve it. But I can be under fear and tension today. I woke up in fear and tension this morning. It was low scale stuff. I wasn't terrified, but I had this sense of impending doom upon me. And you guys gave me some tools to deal with that. And by the time lunchtime came around, it had been written about, shared about, prayed about, and it was gone. Thanks.
We're going to pick up again over on page 75. When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory and we are prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe.
I guess we'll go with something that happened just a couple of days ago. Me and a work partner were down here for a conference, and we both lived down here in this area at the worst of our things. Going through the fourth step with my sponsor, and I don't know how many pages, it doesn't matter, but it was, you know, multiple hours of just deep breath and just a blah. And each one was just a little tiny, what I thought was a big rock, but really just tiny little pebble on a stone that just pulled off one by one by one. And as you get used to how I talk, I have to trick myself with images and stuff like that. If the big book was a pop-up of That would be about my speed. Okay. In just going through this, and this is something we schedule this. This is somebody breaks off their time to do this, to sit with me because somebody did that for them. Not just that, but it takes that much to get through that. And there's guidance and there's a little pushing and there's a little bit of the, little nudging to keep you on track instead of letting you get off and get back into the resentment again, right? And I don't remember doing it. As much as I feared it, as much as I was like, I'm never going to say this, I can't do this, I cannot remember. I can remember starting and then I can remember finishing and going, waiting for the face of Jesus, dude, waiting for that never came. It wasn't ever going to come, right? It's just my head going through it. And it was absolutely just freeing. We're talking about the drink compulsion being gone. I didn't think about that at all. And I haven't since. Like I said, I went after this hard because I wanted to be done. Getting back to what I was talking about for last week, me and this person were driving around down here. We had to spend a couple of days at Waterside. And like I said, every single corner of this place, I had probably pissed on this church. Right. I mean, this is the stomping grounds. I mean, Kogan's up the street, man. This was it. And, lived over on Webb over by the garden, we drove around one upping each other with all these stories and these horrible memories that we had. I asked my wife to marry me on those funky geometric steps over Waterside by the Sheraton. I got to stand on that, tell somebody about that. We're bouncing these stupid, what we think are just stupid stories, and we're trying to get as nasty as possible with the details. But that's what it was about. This is what, we're comfortable enough with somebody to just, somebody doesn't care how stupid it was. And immediately it just dissolves it. It's done. I don't have the same kind of associated memories. I don't have the same kind of resentments. I don't remember that guy looked at me funny over here. I don't remember they didn't serve me. It just, all of the stuff disappeared. That's what the importance of actually having somebody, trusted and, well, especially the sponsor, but whoever you choose to do this with, it dissolves it. It makes it go away. Old man Bill, if anybody hangs out around us up at Jaywalkers, calls it a blanket pardon. Done. No thought. Finished. Get over it. You're finished. And that's my experience with it.
Thanks, Brett. You reminded me of I moved down here on a geographic to go to Old Dominion University, and then they got tired of me because my blood alcohol level was higher than my grade point average, and consequently, I found Alcoholics Anonymous here in dirty old Norfolk, Virginia, and when I take my kids back to where I grew up. I'll go back to Arlington and I got nothing to show them. It's like daddy got arrested over there. Daddy puked over there several times. It's like, I got nothing. We used to smoke over there at my high school. It's embarrassing. Right. And Tyler, remind me, I've got a picture of my sponsor. When we decide who is to hear our story, my first sponsor was a guy called Larry Gabbert. And I'm saying his name because he's dead. And Larry Gabbert was a bricklayer, but he laid a special kind of brick called fire brick. So he worked with, chimneys and anyway, he had this like specialty. He was a super handy guy, and he had a banging mustache. this is banging mustache, handlebars and shit. The bush wax and everything. And he was super proud of it too, man. That mustache would come in the room before he did. And he was so kind to me and so sweet to me. And he just put up with just all my nonsense, I'd call him and give him an earful about something, and he'd say stuff like, oh, well, be like, oh, well, no, see, I just gave you I gave you everything you need to come to the conclusion that I'm a saint. You see, you're not playing my game, but, I can still smell the room at his house, he had this garage behind his house that he had turned into a proper woodworking shop. Like he made furniture and all his tools were hanging up in an organized way. You know, I mean, he had his shit together, you know, he was a dude who was doing stuff that I'd, you know, I'd be sitting on a bar stool going, yeah, I'm going to learn how to make furniture. You know, I don't know how to make furniture, but I envy that dude. I respect that dude, you know? And, kind of like you, I was driving over there kind of wondering if he was going to maybe, if he heard my fist step, he might take a pistol out and rid the world of the scourge that is David, you know, maybe at least ask me to wash the chair after I left. I don't know. But I didn't know what was happening, you know, but I went over there and I wasted no time. I had a written inventory and I he prepared me for a long talk. He said, you know, And I tell guys I sponsor too, when we're doing a fifth step, we block out a time. How much time? It's like, we need plenty of time. We need block out 4 hours. I don't know what you got, but block out plenty of time. Don't come hungry. We're prepared for a long talk. And he says, we explain to our partner what we do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we're engaged upon a life and death errand, right? So in sponsoring people, I try to remember when I'm here in a fifth step, I'm on a life and death errand with this guy. This could be the thing that sets him free. Right. So I'm not in a hurry. We're prayed up. We're ready for a long talk. This is important. What's about to happen. And then we pocket our pride and go to it. And that same thing, I sat there just reading the snivelly list of horrible things. And I know in my head, it's like the sixth one down is the one that I don't want to tell. So I start trying to talk a little more about number three. And he's like, yeah, what else you got? I feel it coming closer and closer. And I squeak it all out. I told him everything, including the stuff that was absolutely I was going to take to my grave, the stuff that I was the most deeply ashamed of. I'm not doing a fifth step up here tonight, but there are things in my past that I still wince when I think of them, right? It said the promise to say we don't regret the past or wish to shut the door on it. I got some stuff I wish I could do, you know? But in this process, every single one of those things has been turned to good use. You know, like I would have told you before I had this experience, I had 100 things that I didn't want to tell somebody. Really, there was like 3. And really, there was just 2. But all 3 of those things have been turned to good use in this context, sitting across from another man, listening to him read his inventory. And I do for them the same thing that Larry Gabbert did for me. He matched every single one of those things that I was so terribly ashamed of. And although they weren't exactly the same, they were similar enough. And he let me know in that moment, just a couple of dudes sitting there, that I wasn't the only one who'd ever done those things or thought those things or felt those things or treated people that way. The only thing that's coming to my mind is gift. So I walked out of there. And I had the experience almost exactly as it's described. I hear people all the time. I did my fifth step and I didn't feel this way. I absolutely, they call them the promises, but our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but we begin to have a spiritual experience. He's always making me begin. We're going to get up to like step 11. And it's like, now that we've started, we've entered the world. You know, we're always beginning around here. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we're on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Now that's super poetic and ornate, but what I didn't have anything like a vocabulary like this when I got here. And after I did the best I could with that and just gave him everything that I had, I really did do the best that I could do. There's been more that's come up since then that's been inventoried, but I gave him everything I was aware of. And he gave me the gift of not being the only one who'd ever felt that way. And I remember leaving there. He lived over in off of Little Creek, and I was living in Ocean View at the time. And I remember leaving his neighborhood, and I swear to God, I saw the blue, the color of the blue sky for the first time. I saw how the green leaves were popping against the blue sky and these white clouds. Who knew clouds are fucking beautiful? Look at those clouds. I mean, it just, like, I was overwhelmed with the okayness of the moment. Like I really felt for the first time. That was, in fact, the first time in my life I had told another person the entire truth about David in this context of the inventory and the fifth step in a regimented way, just following the black words on the white page. I'd been to psychiatrists and counselors, and, you know, they started yanking me in the counselor's office in middle school, you know. They always wanted to talk about my drinking and my father. And I was like, my drinking's my business. My father's an asshole. That's the whole story. That's all you're getting from me. I never told anybody the truth about me. And I did that day. And all I can tell you, man, for the first time, I experienced hope, real hope. Like, maybe it's going to be okay. Maybe I do have a place here. Maybe I'm not just a square peg in a round hole. Maybe. And that was beautiful. It was absolutely amazing. Thanks.
We're going to continue on page 75. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step six. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing.
This was one of the reasons why I was excited to do this. Is 5, 6, and 7 were truly like the meat and the turning point of my of getting a chance to work this program. I honestly could answer that I had done solid work. Stones were in place, didn't skimp on the cement, you know, didn't try to do anything that, you know, didn't try to pull anything for the first time, right? Didn't try to bullshit anybody, because I honestly at this point felt like I was being watched. The God concept had snuck in enough where I was like, oh, okay, you know, I see it. All right, I get it. Okay. You know, like I said, I had a chance to do this in parallel. And my sponsor got a chance to work with somebody who had done something a little bit different on step six. And he calls it the procedure. And I guess it came from something he did in the West Coast. But instead of just the basic stuff that went through, you know, the fourth column with what we all have is the basis of the seven deadly sins. All right. I got handed a list of 28 different defects immediately. There wasn't really a chance to sit back. I was like, oh, cool. This is great. It felt good. Okay. Well, here you go with this. So this list of 28 ones, including the seven, the instruction was, write down two definitions of each one from the dictionary and then read them to him again. So another fourth step. What this did for me, though, was all of these things that were on there, judgment, anger, resentment, fear, intolerance, manipulation, okay, you know, projection, criticism, gossip, arrogance, self-centeredness, retaliation. I mean, it just goes on. Each one of these things opened up more fourth step stuff that I didn't understand that I was doing. This was my image for this one is you see the movies where somebody gets caught from the police and they just keep on pulling guns and knives and shit out of their belt and they just are you done? No. You know, all this, there was so much that I didn't know I was doing or didn't understand that I was doing that. Just the basic couple things that, you know, thankfully I had sponsors that just didn't go with what the book said. And that was the example. And that's what you got. Move on from that. So I had to define all of these things. I went back and I had to do a second round of a fourth step because it brought more things up. And that just made a deeper connection when Dave was talking about the eyes opening. We had a meeting where we'd just done this before the meeting. And if you've ever been to our Tuesday night meeting, it's a mini speaker. We read a couple things from the big book and people share. It was a spectacular night. And I walked outside and in the parking lot of where we sit, it's in the woods. And yeah, rustling leaves and birds and stuff. And one of the guy that was the chair, walks out and he goes, "Are you okay?" I apparently just been standing there just, you know, aware for the first time that there's just something else. Also aware from the fact that there is a lot of stuff that I didn't even know that I was doing. A couple of other guys had said, "Oh, you only got 28. I got 80. And there are lists that are monstrous like that. And so this isn't a new thing, but they're like, "Yeah, I stopped at 50. And it was just like, just it's enough. We got it. Right. And then we'll get into, you know, what we did, you know, for the rest of it. But yeah, defining those in two different ways to see both sides of that. And this was a thing that I found out the other day. Does anybody know what the guy is who works the marionette? You know what the name of that is? It's called the manipulator. It's actually a term for somebody that sits there and makes you puppets dance for me. That was just a huge hit. Like, you know, so, but those things. And the other thing in this too is it says manipulation or any one of these things. The secret is if you can do any of these, you're capable of any of these, then behind you, somebody's doing that to you. You're wide open from behind to have somebody do the exact same thing to you. And that was a really big kind of hit for me that was just like, okay, I think I'm being slick while somebody else is working me just like I'm working them. Because I'm not whole, I'm just this front, right?
Thanks. Yeah, one of the reasons like 5, 6, 7, we do 5, 6, 7. This is the only meeting where we cover three steps in one night. There's several meetings where we do one step over two sessions. But steps 5, 6, and 7 are designed to be worked in the same day. You got an inventory in your hand, you could be on step 9 by the end of the day. But this returning home, I think is, I don't know. I don't hear a lot of people talking about it, but we call it the quiet hour. Did you take your quiet hour? You do the fifth step. You dumped everything you've shared with somebody, and now there's instructions. So I go someplace where I can be quiet, carefully reviewing what I've done. He asked me to pray, thank God from the bottom of my heart that I know him better. That was not hard for me. I felt that way. Doesn't matter if I felt that way, but I did. I'm so nerdy. I have gone home, put this book on the shelf, and then taken it down from the shelf because the instructions say, taking this book down from the shelf. I've done that. Carefully reviewing the first five proposals, we ask if we've omitted anything, or we're building an arch through which we should pass a free man at last. That's always been explained to me that I'm just reviewing the first five steps, what I've just accomplished to date. You know, where am I on step one? You know, have I accepted this idea of personal powerlessness? The unmanageability of my life has nothing to do with my drinking, but the fact that I manage it through my own self-will. Can something greater than me restore me to sanity? What does my decision look like? Did I leave anything out of my fourth step? That's an obvious one, right? I know what I'm phoning it in. And then he says, if we can answer to our satisfaction, like Brian shared, not my sponsor's satisfaction, nobody else's, my own. This is an inside job. I review my contribution to the first five steps. And if I can answer to my satisfaction, yeah, I really have done the best I can. Then we look at step 6. And then he says willingness about 6 times. We emphasize willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things we've admitted are objectionable? Well, the things that I've just admitted are objectionable, besides the, you know, sexual malfeasance, all of it rolls up, and even that rolls up into selfishness, self-centeredness, fear, dishonesty. These are the things that I've ascertained in a rough way are wrong with me. I was a tough sell on selfishness when I got here. I really saw myself as a very generous, magnanimous person. And I had selfishness all tied up with greediness, like selfish equals greedy. And I don't see myself as being greedy. So if you call me selfish, you're calling me greedy. Now we got to have an argument. Turns out I'm greedy. But it's selfishness in the sense that, you know, I had a guy that worked with me. He'd say, I ain't much, but I'm all I think about. And that's me. And I've just seen it all in black and white. I'm running through life, viewing the whole world through this lens of what's in it for me. Is it going to be convenient? Is it going to be comfortable? Is it going to cost me much? Am I going to have to go out of my way? Is it going to be hard? Is it going to be easy? Am I going to like it? Is it going to feel good? It's all just me, worried about me, thinking about me. And you guys all get to be in the show as long as you're, you know, giving me the good stuff, whatever that is, right? Making me feel good, you know? And now I see from this inventory, from this fifth step, how destructive all of that is. All the people that I've harmed, all the lies that I've told, all the, you know, the destruction that I've caused to my parents, to my past employers, I've seen the wreckage in black and white. And I want it removed. I would like for this. This is objectionable to me, and I would like it to be removed. So he says, can he take them all now, everyone? And then he gives me a thing. If I still cling to something and won't let go, I'll keep the money. That's okay. We just ask God to help us be willing. I don't have to hide that from people. I had a sponsor. I had a guy I was unwilling to make amends to. And I told my sponsor that. I was like, I'm never going to make amends to that guy. Screw that guy. He's like, all right. Why don't you pray for the willingness? I'm like, yeah. I'll do that. And I lived that way for quite a number of years. And then I was in a room like this with people like you, and somebody was sharing, and it came over me. All of a sudden I was like, it's time. I got to call Michael. And that's what I did, you know? So if I'm not willing, I can still ask to be willing, but that's all. Thanks.
Our last reading is over on page 76. When ready, we say something like this. My creator, I am now willing you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have then completed step 7.
So part 2 of this procedure, you know, was to take this prayer and say it once for every one of the list of defects. And do that 3 times a day for 30 days. It sounds like a lot. Truthfully, I mean, in a given day, it was only like 45 minutes each time. It only takes like 15 minutes. I waste that much time standing in front of the mirror, scratching my ass in front of the refrigerator. Whatever, you know, can be used for better time, right? It just deepened the awareness of each one of these things for me to get ahead of it when it still popped up in my life. The removal was the removal of me using them as survival weapons instead of, that's it. Just using them as survival weapons, as ways to get my way or things that I thought I wanted. These things are still there. They will always be there. It is me. This bundle of chemicals and whatever the hell I am is all it's that's what they're there. But all of the animals are in the zoo. It's unfortunate that the zookeeper is really old and he can't keep up with all the things. Some days, you know, jealousy gets out. Oh, shit. Well, manipulation got out too. Jealousy got envy, you know. That's the daily thing that I have to continue to remember. But the cool thing about it is that being aware of all of these things that I have in me gets that little feeling when it either comes on or I exercise it. And then I'm like, okay, then in subsequent steps, we fix those problems. But it separated myself from here. It was just something else standing behind. There's God watching, which I can say now, which is really cool, but weird at the same time. But then there's also, instead of two devils on my shoulder like this, there's kind of a me sitting back there going, remember this? Maybe we should think about that. So just more awareness of it and doing almost 66 prayers a day for 30 days really hammers it into you, right? And I was really, really thankful to have that because, you know, I wouldn't have been able to be where I'm at if I had just said, oh, okay, said the prayer once and go. It just wouldn't work for me. I needed that. You know, I'm with two people that love words. I needed that, you know, granular word thing to keep me aware of it. And I'll do this once. And I've done it twice since then. One with the sponsee who didn't make it the 30 days. Oh, and the thing is, if you don't make it the 30 days and you skip it, you got to start over. It sucks to have to be honest and say, I didn't do it at lunch today. I was busy. Well, there you go. Day one. And it was like day 17 for me. I made it more than halfway. And I'm like, mother. All right. So finish it. But it gets easier as time goes on. And it just, this is the key to that. I am now open for, you know, God to also give me a thump on the head and say, hey. Thanks.
Thanks.
Yep.
So I made the decision. In the third step. To get on with the inventory. I did the inventory. I did the fifth step. I did my quiet hour. I've come into contact with my own crippling self-centeredness and I'm willing to have God remove it. And I say the simple prayer. I'm now willing that you should have all of me, the so-called good, the so-called bad, remove from me every single defect of character, which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. I think it should say, remove every single defect of character that's uncomfortable for little David. but apparently, I'm going to ask for them to be removed to the extent that they're going to be useful to higher power or to the people about me. And grant me strength, because I don't have it, to go out from here and do your bidding. Amen. We've then completed steps 7. And the next line is, now we need more action. He's going to send me out onto the amends. And spoiler alert here. It makes sense when we get here that we've never applied these things to our life, right? So we've got this hopper full of material called our past, right? Everything that's happened before me, all the uninventoried fears and unmade amends and uninventoried resentments, they're all out there. So let's start there. So we grind that through the fourth step, reconcile it in the fifth step, offer it back to the Father in 6 and 7, go out in 8 and 9, make the amends for that stuff. Because guess what? We're going to use all of those skills in step 10. we're going to grind our past through this, and we're going to learn some stuff. And then you get to step 10 and it's going to go, that's good. Keep doing that shit. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to pass the baskets in accordance with the 7th tradition. The 7th tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the 7th tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Announcements. Are there any AA related announcements? Yes. Hey, Tyler.
November 18th.
Okay. Thank you very much. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands.
Right.
Literature is available on the table over there. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. If you're a little bit shy, you can email us at info@simpleactions.net. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. The meeting after the meeting. All are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting that will be held at Cafe Stella. In closing, can we please thank our panel again, Brian. Thanks to all who participated. After the Lord's Prayer, everyone will have a chance to come up to the front. Thank Brian for making the trek down from Richmond, and also thank David. I already said that. Joe has agreed to read the last two paragraphs.
Everybody, I'm Joe, my alcoholic.
Joe!
Vision from you. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man. The answers will come. But obviously, you see to it that your relationship with him is right. Great events will come to pass for you, since the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us. May God bless you.
Thank you. Amen. I do have one more announcement. Last week, somebody left a white NA keychain with a teeny little key on it and a barcode thing. Did somebody say it's mine?
No.
Oh. Don't mumble, Ross. If anybody knows, it belongs to. It's here at the front table.
Do whatever she says.
We have a nice way of closing.
What did you say?
He said it was alcoholic shakes.
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy kingdom. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil forever.